1 Thessalonians chapter 2, we'll be reading verses 7 to 12. Paul writes, "But we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. So affectionately longing for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become dear to us. For you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, for laboring night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you. We preach to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe. As you know, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you, as a father does his own children, that you would walk worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." Now, our passage today tells us a few things about what Christian leaders, pastors, should be like. And some may say, well, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a Christian teacher or leader, so what do I care? Well, even if you're not, you need to know who to listen to. You need to hold those who lead and those who teach and your pastor accountable to certain standards. And so the New Testament gives a number of words, a number of terms to speak of spiritual leaders. And all these terms are loaded with meaning. For example, sometimes they're called pastors, shepherds. Acts chapter 20, Paul says, "Shepherd the church of God, which he bought with his own blood." A shepherd leads his sheep. He feeds the sheep. He protects the sheep from the wolves and so forth. Sometimes they're called stewards. 1 Corinthians 4, it says, "The servants of God are stewards of the mysteries of God." So they are to guard and keep and protect the truths of God. Sometimes they're called heralds. And this has been very important to me in my ministry, because a herald, a town crier, a person who gets a message from the king and goes to the people and says, "Hear ye, hear ye, this is what the king has to say." And that term has been important to me because a herald's job was not to see how many people would believe the message. It's not his problem, that's the people's problem if they don't believe the message from the king. It wasn't to try and see if they, to get them to like it or anything like that. When he went back to the king wouldn't say, "Well, how many believed my message?" What he was concerned with was, "Did you proclaim the message faithfully as I told you to?" So, that's what I try to do when I preach. And there are many other terms that are used for pastors and preachers in the New Testament. And in today's passage, he uses two illustrations, two very intimate, far more intimate metaphors of the minister. First, he speaks of him as a mother, and then as a father. Why is he doing that? I think he is trying to emphasize the love of the minister. The love that a parent has for a child. In 1 Corinthians 13, it says, "If I speak with tongues of men and of angels, but don't have love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal." It's basically saying, if I'm preaching and I don't have love, it's just noise. It's pointless. He says, "If I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but don't have love, I'm nothing." So I think Paul is emphasizing here the importance of love by the pastor to his congregation. Now, why is Paul talking about this? Let's remember our context, what's going on here. Paul had been in Thessalonica and he had started a church there. But then he had to leave suddenly, unexpectedly, and this may have prompted some people to say that he wasn't a genuine person who loved the people, that he ran away as soon as things got tough. There were many religious crooks back then, just as there are today. And so some people may have been saying things about Paul because he left the church, abandoned the church. And so Paul is answering those accusations, or possible accusations, what he at least is thinking that people may be saying about him. And last week in verses 1 to 6, we saw he was talking about his ministry among them, and he was talking about how he was not, what he was not like. And these verses today, verses 7 to 12, he says what he was like among them. And he calls on them to remember what he was like. If you remember last week, we were talking about how he had said that he was not a deceiver. He wasn't trying to please men. He wasn't using flattery. You know, he wasn't covetous. He wasn't trying to get stuff from them and so forth. And he was saying, you remember this. You know this. And so now, he says, this is what I was like among you. I was like a mother to you. And I was also like a father to you. And you know that. You remember that. He calls on them to remember what he was like so that they won't believe any accusations against him. Now, two quick notes before we look at the text. Something that I pointed out last week, which is important, and I'm going to just mention it again now. The person who is not part of a church, the person who does not belong to a church but only listens to sermons online or on CDs, or anyone who is not part of a group, cannot have the relationship that Paul is talking about here. You cannot have a parent-child relationship, that a close, intimate relationship with a person who is not here most of the time, or ever. You know, you can't have that with people you don't know, someone I just listened to online. And so there must be a personal relationship that Paul is talking about here. Second of all, one may ask concerning this passage and say, how can a person, it's strange that Paul is talking about how he was both a mother and a father. How can a person be a mother and a father at the same time to these people? Well, the answer is, there are certain elements that a mother has, certain characteristics that a mother has that a pastor should have, and certain characteristics that a father has that a pastor should have, and he should act accordingly. And there needs to be a balance. That's why children have a father and a mother, because there needs to be a balance between the two. Now, Paul here is going to be emphasizing the gentleness and the caring nature of a mother who is taking care of her baby, and also the authority and the leadership of a father. And you have to balance these two. And a pastor needs to balance these two, because if he goes one way or the other, there can be problems. So, let's go through our text. Verse 7, you will notice, begins with the word but, because it's a continuation from verse 6. It's a contrast to what he said in verse 6 at the end, where he says, "Where we could have made demands as apostles of Christ." He was talking about how he could have said, look, we've been appointed by Christ, so you need to do what we say and give us what we say, and you owe our salvation to us. And he could have made demands, but he didn't do that. But, in contrast, we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. He says, we were gentle. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, Paul says, a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all. Paul is reminding them, when I was with you, and the rest of us, Silas and Timothy, when we were with you, we were not abusive, we were not trying to take advantage of you, we were not manipulative, we were ipi, is the word, tender, gentle, kind, sensitive. And I was just thinking how to be that way is to be Christ-like. How often Christ had to deal with his own 12 disciples who would say things and do things that they shouldn't. And Jesus didn't just beat them on the head every time. He was like, okay, people, trying to get them in line and make them more mature. And how often God treats us in a gentle fashion when he could beat us on the head for the things that we do, but he is patient towards us, long-suffering, gives us things that we don't deserve. And Paul says, we were gentle among you. How gentle? As a nursing mother cherishes her own children. Quick note, in the word mother there is in italics, which means that it doesn't exist in the actual text. And so some people suggest, the word that is in the Greek is trophos, which is the nursing one. And so some people say, well, this isn't talking about the mother, this is talking about some wet nurse. I don't agree with that, because it says, as the nursing one cherishes her own children. So it is talking about the mother here, who is nursing her own child. So from all human relationships that Paul could have chosen to talk about his relationship to them, he picks the most tender and gentle relationship that exists. I don't think he could think of anything that is like this, a mother feeding her infant. And Paul's point here, this is in contrast to everything he's been saying in the previous six verses. He's like, we didn't come domineering and seeking self-gain and self-glory and all these things. We gave of ourselves. He says, I was like a mother who cherishes her own children. That word cherishes there in the Greek is thalpi, from thalpori, which means, it literally means to warm something with body heat. It's used in Deuteronomy of a, in the Septuagint, of Deuteronomy of a bird, mother bird that puts its wings over its small birds and keeps them warm. This is what Paul is talking about here. He's like, I could have come and been, I'm the apostle and I'm laying down the law. But he says, I wasn't like that. I was gentle to you like you were my own children. And he takes this further in verse 8. He says, so affectionately longing for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become dear to us. He says, we were affectionately longing for you. He wasn't longing for their money. He wasn't longing for what he could get from them. He wasn't longing for their stuff. He was like, I was affectionately longing for you. Loved you. And I didn't just give you the gospel, but we gave you, he says, our own lives. This wasn't just our duty. Well, God told us to preach the gospel, so we do it. No. We gave our own lives. We had love and passion, this natural affection that a mother has when she feeds her child, her baby, taking care of it out of love. I was thinking about a mother breastfeeding her child and the love that exists, and I was... you know, Ileana is, 16 months now, and she's just stopped completely breastfeeding. And, you know, it was a gradual thing. You know, at some point she drinks less and less and wants more of the bottle rather than the mother. And a couple of months ago, she was at the point where if she wanted any milk during the day, she would drink a bottle, but at night, Stavrula would nurse her, whatever you want to say it, and she would fall asleep that way, and she would put her down. And so what we would do is Stavrula would put Ileana to bed, and at the same time, I would put Elizabeth to bed. And one day, I don't remember, Elizabeth really wanted Mama to put her to bed, not me. That's fine. And Stavrula was like, but I need to put Ileana to bed. And I said, well, I mean, she drinks from the bottle the rest of the time. Why don't you just give me the bottle and I'll put Ileana to bed and you put Elizabeth to bed. Stavrula was like, tears start coming down. And I'm like, what? What? And she's like, but I want to breastfeed Ileana. And I'm like, okay, you can do it. That's fine. You can just put them both to bed. It's okay. Was Ileana paying her to do that? No. Was Ileana praising her and saying, good job, mom, for giving me milk? No. What was Eliana? Was Eliana profiting her in some way? No. What Eliana gave her was sleepless nights and poopy diapers. So what was it? Why? Well, because she loved her. That's it. There's nothing more than that. There's nothing deeper than that. That was it. She loves her child. And Paul is saying, that's what we were like. What we did was, because we affectionately longed for you, you had become dear to us. And he says, we gave our own lives. It wasn't just giving you the gospel. We gave our own lives for you. Again, like a mother who changes her whole life for her child. It doesn't, you know, if you, especially with a baby, it's like, okay, well, the baby is hungry. Well, it's not time for food. It's not lunchtime. No, you feed the baby. The baby is tired. Well, it's not bedtime yet. No. The mother changes her, adjusts her life for her baby. And Paul says, we gave our lives for you. Her own mother gives her life for her child. That's normal. That's natural for a mother. This is why, I'm not going to go off on this, but this is why it is so appalling and disgusting when you think of things like abortion, because it's natural for a mother to love her child and try and give her life for a child, and instead you end up having a mother who would rather kill her child for her own sake. But I won't go further on that. Verse 9. Paul says, for you remember, brethren, our labor and toil, for laboring night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you, we preach to you the gospel of God. Some take this verse to mean that pastors or teachers should not be paid. They should have a job, normal job, whatever a normal job is, and teach on the side. I don't think that's what Paul is teaching here specifically. Numerous times in other places Paul says that those who preach should be supported and paid for, especially in 1 Corinthians 9. He says, he goes into this, he says, who goes to war at their own expense? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit? Who tends a flock and does not drink the milk of a flock? You know, you don't muzzle the ox while it treads the grain. And he said, even the Lord said, that those who preach the gospel should live by the gospel. And in fact, Paul himself was more than happy to receive support and help from churches when they could help him. But Paul would never ask for money from new converts. When he would go to a new church and start a new church, he wouldn't ask for money from them because he wanted to make sure that no one thought that he was doing it for the money. And so what would happen was either there would be other more established churches that would send him money so that he could do the work, or if he didn't have any of that, he would work. And that apparently, even though we know that the church in Philippi sent him some money while it was in Thessalonica, apparently it wasn't enough, because he says in Thessalonica, when he was with them, he worked night and day so that he wouldn't be a burden to them. And we know that from Acts 18 that he was a tent maker. And so you have Paul, who is in Thessalonica, and he's working as a tent maker, and then in the times when he could be resting, he's not. He's studying and preparing and teaching. And he wants to remind them of that, because that's not easy and that's hard. But again, the point that he's trying to make here is, in case there are any accusations, he's like, do you remember what my life was when I was in Thessalonica, where I would work, and then when I wasn't working, I was teaching you? Does it seem like I was a person who was trying to take advantage of you and take things from you? No. And you know that. That's why in verse 10 he says, you are witnesses. Verse 10, you are witnesses. And God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe. He says, you know this. You saw this. And God is witness. Even God who knows the heart. I'm calling upon God to witness that we were, you know, we were not greedy and self-seeking and deceitful and all these things, but we were devout and upright and blameless, he says. Now, when he says blameless, he doesn't mean sinless perfection. He's simply saying that We didn't cause scandals and offenses when we were there. And you know that. Verse 11. As you know, again, as you know, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father does his own children. So now he brings in a new picture of the father who's exhorting them and leading them and charging them how to live. The word that is used there for exhorted, it's a great word. It's the same word, well this is a verb here, but the noun is the same noun that is used of the Holy Spirit. When you read of the Comforter, or the in the Greek it's parakletos. Parakletos, the word para means something on the side. Kletos is someone who is called. And so he is saying, so parakletos literally is someone who is called to be on your side. Which is, that is used of the Holy Spirit, but Paul is using it here for how they lived among them. It's when someone is a parakletos, who is called to be on your side, that can include someone to comfort you, to teach you, to lead you, to encourage you. He's there for you. And all these things can be implied in this word. And these were people who were young Christians, didn't know much about the Bible, didn't know much about God. They already had persecution by their fellow countrymen. And Paul is saying, I was like a father to you. I was teaching you, comforting you, leading you, encouraging you through all of this. And what does a father want most from his children? Verse 12. I was charging every one of you that you would walk worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Paul is not just interested in being a person who is pleasing to God himself, but he wants the church also, the people that he knows, the people that he's taking care of, to also please God. And he's like, I charge you to walk worthy of God. And there are a lot of people today in evangelical churches who say, no. They don't like stuff like this. They say, don't tell people how to live their lives. That's legalism. That's not legalism. We're not telling people to follow the law in order to be saved. But you cannot separate justification from sanctification. When God saves you, he changes you. We're not saved by good works, but we are saved unto good works. And Paul says, as a father, I was teaching you as my children and charging you to live like Christians. We call ourselves Christians. We're taking the name of Christ and we're applying it to ourselves. That's a big deal. So we're to live accordingly. And Paul says, that's what I was doing. As a father, I was telling you, if you have the family name, live according to that. God, who has called you into his own kingdom and glory. Let me close by saying one thing. Something that I've had on my mind this week as I've been going through texts talking about what pastors and teachers should be like. I don't think anyone doesn't know that, you know, I realize my own shortcomings in this, in being a pastor, and so I do ask that you would pray for me to be more loving and gentle when I need to be, and more firm in teaching the truth and exhorting you to live a holy life. Every time I read qualifications for a pastor, it's like, okay. My hope is in 2 Corinthians, where Paul is talking about what a preacher should be like, a preacher of the gospel, and he asks the question, Paul asks the question, who is sufficient for these things? It's a good question. And he ends up saying, no one. And he says, our sufficiency is from God. I'm glad that Jesus has died for all of my sins, including my failures as a pastor. But I pray for myself and for all of us, for whatever it is that God has called us, that he would give us the strength and the grace to be what he has called us to be. And I pray that you would ask for that you would pray for me also on this. I want to thank you for your attention. Let's pray.